Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of the Women's World Cup show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Charlton attacking midfielder Ella German. And Ella German, I should say Lily Ag. Ella German is our co-host who will be with us in future. Lily Ag is the Charlton attacking midfielder who is with me today. And Lily, we of course should start with England's chances. Some people are saying we could go all the way. How do you rate our chances?
Yeah, definitely. I'm really excited, actually. I think we've got the best team going forward, and I think Phil's selected a great squad, and I'm excited to see how far they can go.
So when you talk about our offensive strength, who are you looking to bring that goal threat?
I think there's a few. I think you've got, you know, the likes of Beth Mead, you've got Nikita Paris. You know, I think they're both going to get goals hopefully this tournament as well. You have, you know, some of the players from the midfield coming through. Jill Scott often, you know, gets ahead on a few and gets some goals, so I think, yeah, there'll be numerous players that I think can cause a threat to the other teams.
One thing that we often talk about in international tournaments and with national sides is how well the players know each other, because you don't get as much time to work together as you do with your club sides. In terms of their domestic careers and their careers together for England, how close-knit is this group?
Yeah, I think, like you said, they you know, they all know each other outside. They often, the majority of them play, you know, inside out every week against each other. I think, you know, you've got maybe a few that play, for example, Tony Duggan playing at Barcelona, but before that she was obviously at Man City, and, you know, she's played with them, and they're really close, I think, group of girls, and every time they go away together, the vibes in camp I hear often are really good and spirits are high. So I think, you know, the team cohesion there between them all will show through this summer, hopefully.
And you mentioned, of course, that going forward is the real strength. In terms of Phil Neville's approach to the tournament, is that going to be his focus? Is he going to be looking to just go all guns blazing and outscore teams, or is it a little bit more complicated?
I hope so. As an attacking player, I'm all for attacking, exciting football rather than kind of thinking defensively and keep ball and passing backwards. So I'm hoping Phil goes for it. I think they've got a great squad, like you said, players that really can change the game and score goals. So, you know, if you score more goals than the other team, you've won the game. So I personally hope that they will do that. Again, you've got some great defenders in there though, so I think, like you said, they are very good attacking, but there's also players in there that will keep the defence clear.
Always good to have that solidity at the back. You of course are a player, as you say, who knows a thing or two about scoring goals. If you were playing in this team and you were looking for some service, who would you be looking to as players you'd love to play with?
Oh, it's difficult. If, you know, unfortunately, Jordan Nobbs isn't going to be at the World Cup this year. If she was, she's somebody who would have absolutely pulled the strings in midfield. Finding, like you said, the likes of Nikita Paris, players like that. I think in the middle, again, Jill Scott. I think Kira Walsh, you know, she's young coming through. She's great at picking the ball up and finding that pass. I think you've probably seen some clips leading up from previous games of her, you know, whether it's, you know, 60-yard switcher play or, you know, little connecting passes in the midfield. So I think, yeah, a few of those players will look to find. But again, I think we'll have people like Beth Mead probably creating the chances herself.
Creating the chances herself, yeah. Running for midfield. Wonderful stuff. In terms of the balance of a squad with experience, it's an old cliche that gets wheeled out in knockout competitions. When the pressure's on, particularly towards the far end, which is where England want to be, you need to have been there before. Now, whether or not that's necessarily true, what's the balance of this England squad like? You mention, of course, Jill Scott. She's 32. Steph Houghton brings experience as well. But there are young players breaking into the side as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think Phil's picked, you know, a really good squad, in my opinion. He's picked, like you said, experience in there, in the likes, like you said, of Jill Scott. But he's also then kind of taken a risk in bringing the likes of people like Georgia Stanway, who are coming through. You know, I think she's fantastic. She's an exciting talent. And I hope, really do, that she gets her chance, because I think, you know, she's proven in the league that she can score goals, whether, you know, age is doesn't really matter. So yeah, it's exciting. I think there's a mix of, like I said, exciting talent coming through, and then also, you know, the stability of players that have been around and been there. And like I said, you do really need that mix of both to kind of get the best out of a team. And you've got, you know, Lucy Bronze, players like that who have experienced playing at the highest level, winning trophies. And I think, like I said, that will hopefully show this summer.
Are there any areas in this England team that worry you? Are there any particular positions where you look at Neville's options and go, hang on a minute, that could be a gap?
It's difficult. I think that the, from my opinion, I'd say, you know, the midfield is a bit of a topic at the minute, because, like you said, you've got players like Lucy Bronze, who actually Phil has been trialling in the midfield, and she's been playing centre mid, and, you know, she's one of the best right backs in the world. And I think she's made that clear. And don't get me wrong, she's versatile. She can play midfield. But I think that kind of shows maybe a bit of worry from Neville, that actually, does he trust the midfielders that he's got available if he's having to put the best right back in the world into the midfield? And obviously, like I said earlier, Jordan Nobbs is out injured. Izzy Christensen was another central midfielder that now can't obviously be at the World Cup. She unfortunately got injured. So it's tough. It is. And again, that's, it's football. It's a matter of opinions. You're going to have some people that think that's a fantastic idea. Yeah, get her in there and get her involved. But then others, like you said, might think, actually, why would you take out your best right back and replace her? So for me, I think the midfield, and I don't think he knows his strongest midfield or his strongest kind of team going forward. Hopefully they'd have worked on that over the, you know, the weeks coming into the tournament, and kind of established who he is going to play. And if he wants Lucy Bronze in there, hopefully then she now understands her role and what she can do. So for me, that would probably be the main weakness. But other than that, you know, I think we are very, very good going forward. I think we'll be fine.
That's an interesting point, though, where you're confident with the defence, confident with the front line, and the midfield is what you're questioning. How is Neville going to be looking to set this team up to get the best out of those strikers? Because the likes of Kirby and Duggan have got goals in them, but you do have to give them the ball.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like I said, he's trialled and errored a few teams over the last few weeks going into it. And again, until we see that first game, we are going to be unsure. Even the game, you know, at Brighton, I don't, you know, it's going to be interesting to see who he sets up. Is he going to, you know, kind of have another little trial if he's still unsure, or is he going to play his strongest? But then again, you know, a week before playing, you know, is that really, you know, what you want to do? So it's going to be interesting. I think, again, he's the manager. He's going to know what he wants to do. And I think the squad themselves, you know, they believe in him. They trust what he's doing, and they trust that he, you know, has the ability and the knowledge of what's best for the team. And I think, like I said, we'll see when they're in the World Cup.
The squad believe in Phil Neville. Do you believe in Phil Neville? What do you make of his reign as manager thus far?
I do, actually. I think he, like I said, I've heard good things from some of the players. They talk very highly of him. I think he's a lovely guy, as well as very knowledgeable. And I think he's brought almost a lease of life, really, back to the squad and the girls. And, you know, they're really confident. And, you know, I personally think confidence is a massive thing. If you go into the World Cup and you're a bit, oh, you know, I don't know how we're going to do, then I don't think you will do very well. Whereas I think all the girls are going in there knowing that they have a great chance. They've prepared well. They feel fit. They've had good seasons, the majority of them that have been picked. And I think, like I said, that'll be, you know, going forward, if they're confident, the manager's confident and believes in them, and I think they'll be fine. Yeah, exciting.
Does it bother you that the manager of the England women's team is a man?
No. I think, like I said, in women's football, you have a mix. You have lots of male coaches, male managers. Same as you have now more and more women coaches and managers. I think it's great to have a bit of a balance, really. I think, you know, sometimes girls can be a bit maybe sensitive, and that's why it's sometimes good to have a female involved, whether it's as a coach and a manager. And I think, you know, often then you get men that come into women's football and think, actually, oh gosh, you know, maybe it is a little bit different. But in terms of the football that's played, you know, I think, like you said, it's very similar. So I don't think it affects too many people at all. And like I said, he's brought really good vibes into the camp. So I think they're, yeah, really happy.
But of course, if we're having a man as the coach of the women's team,
yeah,
it should also be possible to have a woman as coach of men's sides. We've heard possible rumours at Chelsea that were Maurizio Sarri to go, Emma Hayes, who's done such good work with the women's team, could come in and coach the men's side. Is that something you're expecting to see happen, not specifically at Chelsea, but at a club in England in the near future?
Yeah, I think, like you said, we're in a world now where I don't think it should be a case of, you know, a male or a female. It should be based upon, like you said, knowledge and kind of, like you said, when people compare even playing football, men's football, women's football. I think it's very, you know, football is football. So the difference between men and women technically, you know, I often don't find is a massive difference. What is a difficult situation is, of course, a man is going to be a lot faster than me, and no matter how much I go to the gym, of course he is going to be stronger than me. So it's a completely different game in terms of that, for playing, but technical side I don't think it is at all. And I think in terms of managing the game and understanding a game of football, you know, there's no say that men will understand the game more than women if they have the same, you know, A license and they've got a great history of where they've coached and managed and they're successful. I don't personally see why that shouldn't be, you know, an option going forward in the future.
No, absolutely. Will we see a women's coach taking over at a men's team in the near future? Get in touch. You can call in on 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp on that same number or Twitter. It's at Love Sport Radio. But coming up here on the Women's World Cup show, we'll be assessing England's rivals, the other favourites, and we might even be hearing from Guy Watts, our man in Madrid.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Women's World Cup show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and Charlton attacking midfielder Lily Agg. Lily, you're confident about England's chances. You think they can go all the way, but there are a few teams in this tournament who will be feeling exactly that. Let's have a look at some of England's rivals. We've got to start with the USA. They're traditionally the big firepower of the women's game. They're ranked number one in the world, reigning champions. Can they hold on to their title?
Oh, I'm going to be controversial, of course, and say no. Like I said, they are a great team. They've got great history. You know, everyone who, as a girl, grows up, it's still kind of where football happens, America and scholarships, and you watch films, and that was kind of the dream. So of course, you know, they've got fantastic players. They got, you know, that are well known, Megan Rapinoe, players like that, that people aspire to. So they're gonna have a great team. They've got great experience, but again, I don't fancy them.
Because it's England through and through.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's a few teams, aren't there? It's going to be tough. All the group stages are difficult, even to get out of. But I think, like I said, my money's on England. I think you've got to be confident. Home team.
Yeah, well, you've got to back yourself. You always have. As an England fan, you've got to believe in yourself. Spain, of course, will be one side who could be a sort of dark horse in the competition. Jenny Hermoso stands out. The Atletico Madrid striker was top scorer in Spain with 24 goals this season. Talking of Spain, talking of Madrid, we have an all-English Champions League final coming up tomorrow night between Liverpool and Spurs in the Men's Champions League. And I'm delighted to say we've got our guy in Madrid.
It's our guy in Madrid.
Guy Watts is out there in the Spanish capital, pounding the streets, talking to fans. Guy, what's going on?
Hi, Johnny. Yeah, evening, Lily, as well. I'm out here. It is a very, very busy Plaza Mayor this evening. It's much busier than it was at the same time last night. It's a combination of Spurs fans, Liverpool fans, looks like Madrid locals as well. The temporary seating that is overlooking the five-a-side pitch that has been erected in this part of the medieval city of Madrid, which does look obviously massively out of place, but it is pretty well populated this evening. There's people out on their balconies. It's a very, very lively atmosphere, but all very good-natured as well, I'm pleased to say.
You said there's a five-a-side pitch there, Guy. Will you be getting your boots on?
I've thought about it, Johnny, but as you know, I'm very much on my own out here. I didn't really fancy my chances of kind of ingratiating myself with a local team who are probably, if the recent Spain teams have been anything to go by, extremely good when it comes to small-sided football. So I thought I'd better not risk annoying any locals. I didn't really want to get on a team with Liverpool or Spurs fans and have to tell them I was a Man United fan. So no, I've stayed a little bit clear of the five-a-side pitch myself. But if you go to our Twitter at Love Sport Radio, you'll see a bit of action going on in the background to a few of my videos.
Yeah, I would live in fear from trying to take on anyone from Madrid on a five-a-side pitch. You've, of course, been speaking to Liverpool fans, Spurs fans who are there in the capital, of course, enjoying themselves, drinking lots of orange juice. What's more broadly the atmosphere with the two fan bases?
Well, I think they're both in pretty good moods, pretty optimistic spirits, which is good to see. I think there is a little bit of a difference between the attitudes of the Spurs and the Liverpool fans. The Liverpool fans have come, I would say, more in expectation than hope, especially after last year, the disappointment of losing to Real Madrid. There are obviously kind of controversies, what with the Sergio Ramos elbow on Loris Karius, and then, of course, the errors from the goalkeeper himself. I think they feel like they're owed one a little bit. The Spurs fans, they're optimistic, but I think there's a sense of we're happy to be here a little bit more than there is with the Liverpool fans, which is understandable. It's the first European Cup final in their history. They needed a comeback from 3-0 down on aggregate in the second half of their semi-final against Ajax to make it here, not to mention that dramatic semi-final against quarter-final against Manchester City as well. So, yeah, it's been quite a journey for Spurs, but there's also a sense that it might not be done quite yet. I don't think any of us can really wait for the game, which kicks off in just over 24 hours' time now.
Guy, wonderful stuff. We're looking forward to it. We'll be coming to our guy in Madrid throughout the show, throughout the evening, for updates from the Spanish capital. Guy Watts there, reporting direct from Madrid. Fantastic stuff, Liverpool fans. This whole idea, and I'm interested on your take on this, Lily, this idea in being owed something as a footballer, as a football team. We lost the final last year, so we have to win it. Does that apply?
No, not really. It's one of them, isn't it? It's as it is. You got to kind of get over it, haven't you? I think I can be a bit harsh there towards the Liverpool fans, but it's one of them. You know, they've earned them their place to get there. And like I said, they've done well to be runners-up that year. It's one of them, really.
Do you think there are any sides in this Women's World Cup who will be feeling that they're owed one, that actually they've been hard done by and it is their time to win it?
It's difficult, isn't it? I think Germany are going to kind of want to get back to the top where they once were. I think they've kind of lost their way a little bit and had a change of manager and things like that, and I think they're going to feel actually now it's their time to come back and be near the top where they think obviously they belong.
Well, let's have a chat about Germany, because it's been a funny few years for them. Reigning Olympic champions, only got to the quarterfinals of Euro 2017. They were finished last at the She Believes Cup in the US in spring 2018. Not at those lofty heights. And yet, if we look at the squad, it is jam-packed with talent.
Yeah, exactly that. Like you said, I think it kind of comes down to maybe what you were saying earlier about, you know, team cohesion and how they get on. And like you said, they've got some unbelievable talent in there and some really good players. And that's, like you said, with a wealth of experience and some of the young players coming through. But again, something's just not clicked for them. They've not gelled over the time. And, you know, that could be then, like you said, the manager. But something's just not happened. And hopefully, you know, now it'll be interesting to see if maybe having somebody new in has maybe given them again like that lease of life. And it'll be very interesting to see how they get on. I personally hope that they do pretty well, and I like to see, you know, some of their players step up really and see how they get on,
because it's been a transitional period on the pitch as well. Some veteran players, the likes of Mittag, sort of finishing their international careers. Some serious youth coming through. We're hearing about Julia Gwynn, who's been a revelation in the run-up to the tournament. Still only 19, off to Bayern Munich in the summer. Can she do it on the world stage?
Yeah, so again, I think it's interesting. I think, you know, when I played out actually last year in Germany, she was playing for Freiburg. And she was one of their star players. And like I said, to be 19 and to be scoring goals and playing how she played, you know, even playing against her, I thought, you're going to be something special. You are going to be a massive talent. So again, it's more if they give her that chance. They have got, again, a great depth of squad. So it's going to be interesting to see if she kind of gets her moment. If she does, you know, fantastic if she can take it at 19. But again, depending on how the manager and her thoughts, it might be a case of, like I said, then if she plays or if she doesn't, if she can take that opportunity.
It's always great to see a young player star, but also as a non-professional footballer, as a football fan, you won't be able to relate to this, Lily, but there's a pain there as well, because the first time you see a player younger than you do it on the world stage, you finally have to admit that the dream is over. I remember it was the first time kids born in 2000 were playing Premier League football. I thought, right, I can no longer kid myself. But we can't kid ourselves about this Germany side either, because there's experience in there, and Marijan, the Lyon playmaker, is just fantastic.
Yeah, she's fantastic, as you just said. Like you said, you know, she's just won, you know, the league with Lyon. They just won another trophy. She's got, I think, I couldn't even tell you how many trophies now. She's got a wealth of experience, and she's, you know, she's got the mix of age and also experience, but she's also, you know, still so talented and learning every game that she plays, and she's got such high standards. So it's great to see. Yeah, I think she'll be great.
In terms of that time you spent playing in Germany, are there any players featuring at this World Cup or you played with or against who you felt were just unstoppable?
Yeah, there's a few. For me, So Lena Lena McGall, at the time, she was playing for Freiburg, scored numerous goals at her time there. She's just signed for Bayern Munich this season, and she's had a fantastic season there, scoring goals, assisting goals, and she's now in the World Cup squad. She's young as well. I think she's ever so talented. I think she'll have a great tournament, and I hope she does. I think she's definitely going to be someone that will shine if she gets the opportunity. Another player that will spring to mind is Svenja Huth. She was playing for Potsdam. She's so fast. Literally.
You said so fast in the way that isn't just someone having seen someone be fast. I feel that you've had her run past you.
Yeah, it's one of them. Honestly, you think you've got her and she just goes. And she's rapid and she's clever and she can finish. And, you know, again, I think she will be a great player this summer for Germany if she gets given the chance.
It's interesting. It's sounding like quite a few German talents. Could they be a big favourite for that tournament? But it's all well and good, Lily, us sitting here going, we back England, as we should, or indeed that we back Germany. Let's have a look at this. Let's look at it carefully. In just a moment, we'll go through this group by group and we'll see who could come out on top. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
It is the Women's World Cup show, the first ever, right here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and the sensational Lily Ag, professional attacking midfielder at Fort Charlton. And we've got to assess this tournament in some depth. We're so confident about England, as we should be, but there are other teams in there. Let's look at this group by group. Who's going to have it easy? Who might struggle? First of all, Lily, I've got to ask, there is the old cliche, the group of death. Do any of the groups in this tournament leap out at you as one that is perhaps unusually difficult?
No, to be fair. I think there is a good mix throughout. I think, if anything, I remember when the draw was being done, and I remember joking, saying we're definitely going to get Scotland and obviously Japan, if you remember, the heartache of that. So, one of them should have put money on it. I knew, and it come along, and I thought, oh gosh, as if. So, if anything, hopefully that doesn't, you know, remain in the thoughts of the players, and they maybe think back to that. I think we've got a tough group. Scotland, you know, they've been doing great, and Shelley Kerr's given them kind of, you know, new players and a bit of freshness going in there. And I know some of the players from there. You've got Fiona Brown, great player. She's been playing in Sweden, having been out there. She's been, I think, scoring goals, assisting, playing week in, week out, growing as a player. You've got Claire Emsley, who's just actually got a move to Orlando in America from Man City. Played with
Is
her.
That playing with Marta then?
Play with Marta and Morgan. Alex Morgan. Yeah, so
that's quite the squad.
Not a bad lineup. And like I said, she's been at City. I played for her at Bristol. She's fantastic. She would stay every day after training, whipping in, you know, shots, top corner, bottom corner, right foot, left foot. So hardworking, so quick, so driven. And so I think that probably talks as well for a lot of the Scotland squad. So yeah, I think our group potentially is a bit risky. As confident as I am, it's one of them.
That's all right. It's a tough group, but we'll get through it. It's interesting to hear you identifying so many specific players in that Scotland team who could cause England a problem, because I was not only interested but actively amused to read a quote from Scotland coach Shelley Kerr, where she said, "I don't think we're dark horses." Is that mind games, or are they actually not good enough?
Nah, I genuinely think they've got a good team. If you break down again, their players, Kim Little, you know, Jennifer Beattie at the back, you've got, like I just said, Claire Emsley, you've got Fiona Bratt. They've got a very good squad, and actually I do think they might surprise a few people. But again, hopefully not for England.
Hopefully not England. In terms of the rest of that group, of course, Japan, there's history there. Argentina as well. How good are Argentina? What's the perception of them?
Yeah, I think they're probably more dark. I don't really know too much about Argentina. I think if people looking at that group, they'll probably rule out them straight away, so which is obviously dangerous to do. But I think even me, I'd say I don't think they will do great. I think it will be between obviously the other three, hopefully with England finishing top.
Do you think England will finish top?
Yeah, I do. I think, I think, like I said, Scotland might actually go second over Japan, I think, in my head, if they play well. You know, Japan have got some good players, don't get me wrong, but I think they've kind of just had a bit more luck over the years. Hopefully their luck has run out and we will see how they do. But I'd go England, Scotland.
Wonderful stuff. So Group A, France, South Korea, Norway, Nigeria. France are the name that stand out. Some really talented players in there, the likes of Le Sommer. Norway, of course, would have a Ballon d'Or winner in their ranks, but Ada Hegerberg is not going to be at this World Cup.
Yeah, that's quite, like I said, it's mad to think, you know, one of the best players in the world isn't going to be there for her country. But again, you know, she's standing by her views, and it's a great cause that she's standing for, really.
So just talk us through what happened with this. So there's a situation where she believes that women's football isn't taken seriously in her native Norway. So essentially, for an indefinite period, she's on strike.
Yeah, like you said, so her sister as well, they feel that it's not been, like you said, taken seriously. Over there, you've got obviously the men and then men's football, kind of the contrast as always between men and women. And I think, like you said, she's one of the most well-known women's footballers and one of the best. And actually,
also, disproportionately, so much better at football than any male Norwegian currently playing in the world.
You'd like to think so, exactly. But again, that's the argument, and that's what they're standing for. And, you know, they don't really understand why the men are one way and the women, you know, don't get as much or gets, you know, supported. So fair enough, you know, I think it's a great cause, and like I say, hopefully she can get something from it as a country, and hopefully they can move forward. Yeah.
Absolutely. Marta, who is of course going to be with Brazil at this World Cup, widely recognised as the greatest female player of all time, spoken out in support of Ada, saying, listen, everyone needs to get behind it. She can't do it on her own. I can't do it on my own. And the point that's being made with this protest is that there needs to be equality. There needs to be equality of representation, of attitude. And also, coming up in just a moment, there needs to be equality on Wikipedia.
This is Love Sport.
You are listening to the Women's World Cup show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Lily Ag. We've just been discussing the case of Ada Hegerberg, who is, of course, current Ballon d'Or winner in women's football. She is not representing her nation at this summer's World Cup, hasn't been for quite some time, because she believes the sport isn't taken seriously enough and that it needs to be represented more equally. That applies on the pitch, it applies off the pitch, it also applies online. And I'm delighted to say that we are joined on the line by Rebecca Myers, who's a journalist for the Sunday Times and Sunday Times Sport. Good evening, Rebecca. Thanks ever so much for joining us. You've been doing a bit of important work on Wikipedia.
Yes, I have. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, so I was invited along to this brilliant event today run by Wikimedia, who are the company who oversee Wikipedia and Adidas, basically to sort of write history, because they found that there weren't many women's football profiles on their site. So I think the rough figure they thought was around 3% of their football profiles were about women, female players, women's teams. And they decided that obviously needed to change. They held this kind of editathon and everybody got involved and wrote profiles.
Fantastic stuff. So you personally were there slaving away. You got through one profile. Was it just the one?
It was just one that I sort of properly wrote a good chunk of. I did a sort of little couple of tweaks on others and got a better idea, I think, especially of sort of thinner profiles. So some people have a profile. It's not that they don't exist at all, but maybe they only have like one line or one paragraph. But yeah, then I got involved more sort of deeply with one profile and really updated it, which was incredibly satisfying and a real kind of privilege to be able to do.
Yeah, wonderful stuff. I'm joined in the studio by Lily Ag, who is a professional footballer for Charlton Athletic. And we actually were going through her Wikipedia profile together before the show.
The joys.
It was absolutely wonderful. Rebecca, there are going to be people listening to this, and we know that not everyone has a particularly forward-thinking attitude to the women's game. There will be people listening to this and thinking, this is nonsense. Why does Wikipedia matter? But it is important, isn't it?
It's huge. I mean, I've always been a massive believer in you can't be what you can't see. you know, history is invisible at this stage. There are players who have played an enormous part in you know, women's football in this country who didn't even have profiles. In particular, the Dick Kerr ladies, who are, you know, pretty much the most successful women's football team we've ever had, the earliest football team in England, who played for 50 years and won 750 matches. And most of their players didn't have a profile at all until today. So this is huge. These are massive gaps in the history of the women's game in this country. And I think it will be a disaster to kind of move forward and make these amazing strides, but forgetting the women who've gone before us, who had to work so hard for their place in the game.
Hi, Rebecca. It's Lily.
Hi, Lily.
Just to, like you said, to go on from that, I find it amazing that, you know, still so many people don't know what actually happened to women's football and, you know, what happened after, you know, at the time of Dick Kerr's team and things like that. Like I said, women's football had to stop for such a long period of time. And actually, yeah, it's crazy how many people don't know that. And that's actually why, you know, the women's game is still growing. And it is very far behind the men's game in theory, but it's getting there. But actually, people need to understand the reason behind that and why it is so far behind.
Absolutely. I mean, I think if you went down the pub, you know, let's say tomorrow night before the big game, and you asked, you know, people who would consider themselves real proper football fans, you know, true or false, the FA literally banned women's football,
yeah.
You know, in the 1920s, not in the 1800s, in the 1920s. Yeah. So many people would say, no, come on, you're having a laugh. But like you said, it's such a crucial moment in the history of the women's game in this country, because this is why so much work needs to be done now, because we're undoing years, decades of damage. And I think until people understand that and understand what the women's game has been through, you know, that's, you'll still get those comments like, oh, I can't believe you're like doing all this stuff, and people who don't understand how important it is to put the extra work in.
Yeah, exactly. I think they'd be even more surprised, like you said, to maybe suggest that actually, you know, back then as well, women's games were sold out. They were stadiums absolutely full with, you know, you're talking 50,000-60,000 plus. And that was just a regular occurrence. And like you said, it is difficult now to grow that again after being stopped for so long. And like you said, the 1920s, we're not talking decades ago. You know, it's such a long time ago. In terms of, like you said, where we are now, but the progress that's been made from where women's football was, you know, banned, as you said, by the FA, it's amazing at the growth to where we're at now, but also even more amazing at the chance of it getting even better.
Well, on that, Rebecca, we're talking about growth. You do fantastic work in your career, both covering the women's game and, of course, women's issues more broadly. Do you see this summer and this summer's World Cup as a real opportunity for the attitudes to the game to continue improving and the representation of the game to improve as well?
Absolutely. And thanks for your kind words there. But yeah, it's a bit sort of spine tingling. It's almost terrifying how much this summer could mean for women's sport. I mean, there are lots of reporters who've been doing this a lot longer than I have, but I remember games back in sort of 2015 that I was covering that were a handful of fans, and people had no idea really at all what was going on. And then last year, the Women's FA Cup final, 45,000 people. I'm absolutely not ashamed to say that I cried. You know, I was so moved and sort of overwhelmed, because I think when you've seen it go through those difficult stages without support and with the trolls and all of that, and then you see what it can achieve and how much people can love it if they just give it a shot, it's really an amazing feeling. And this summer, you know, I just don't think we've ever had an opportunity like this to change people's minds and to showcase what women can do. You know, cricket, football, netball, athletics later on towards the autumn, it's just going to be an extraordinary few months. And I think, you know, there's literally no excuse not to support, you know, the teams and get behind it and get excited.
Rebecca, it would be very easy for us to sit here and say, well, listen, we're on a women's football show talking to a journalist who covers women's football. The issue's sorted. But that is clearly not the case. There's a lot of work yet to do. How do you feel that the sport is perceived in the country at the moment?
I think, like you said, it's easy when you operate within a certain kind of bubble, maybe, to sort of forget that there's a lot more opposition than you might come up against. I mean, I have, you know, my own sort of trolls, and I see us that side of it relatively often. But I think we forget that there will be people in the UK who don't want their daughters to play. You know, it's not completely eradicated. We still have so much work to do. And I think, you know, basic things that I think are really, really important that I don't want us to forget as we have this amazing summer of celebrating women's sport. Stuff like, you know, a lot of players, even at the highest levels in other sports as well, rugby I'm thinking in particular, are earning, you know, maybe 20 grand for a year for their job. I think people who have come into the women's game and are really supporting it and think, well, they've got a contract, that's great, don't actually realise that, you know, they're scraping by. If you live in London on that kind of wage, that's nothing. And I think we forget that, and I think we absolutely can't lose sight of, just because the Man Cities and, you know, Lyon and the really, really big name teams can pay, you know, six-figure salaries now, most teams can't. And until we get proper sponsorship and companies actually put their money where their mouths are, players are going to be giving up, you know, I've heard of players giving up double size salaries to be a professional sports person. Mm. That
farcical.
Absolutely should not be something they
well,
have to do.
Particularly when you've got the likes of Alexis Sanchez earning a reported £400,000 a week and not actually playing very much football at all. A six-figure annual salary suddenly doesn't sound quite where it should be. Rebecca, delightful to speak to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank
Rebecca
you.
Myers there, journalist for the Sunday Times and the Sunday Times Sport. Lily, I just want to pick up on a couple of issues that Rebecca raised there. One is the question of salary. In your opinion, is the women's game supported adequately in a financial sense?
I think, you know, it is a tricky situation. The problem is, if you're going to get 500 people through the doors week in, week out, then the women can't justify demanding salaries that the men get, in my opinion.
That's true, but surely they can justify asking for salaries that they can live off.
Yeah. Oh, minimal. Like you said, I think the FA have now, I remember when I signed for Bristol, and you know, the expected contact time in theory and contract is 16 hours. And I think if you broke down what I earned at Bristol at the time, as opposed to the 16 hour, you know, it's below minimal wage. In fact, what happened there, you know, I was paying to play, and that's supposed to be full time. And that's something, like you said, it isn't really acceptable in terms of funding and terms of going forward. It's not a job. You can't classify it as a job when you're...
But it is a job,
yeah.
But it's not supporting
it's not,
you.
Yeah, financially, it's far from, like you said, I had to work. I then was paying rent, and what I earned was below minimal.
And of course, if you're playing at a high enough level where you're training the whole time, that could impact upon your ability to do a different job and therefore pay that rent. So what's the solution? How can we get to a place where players are going to be more fairly remunerated for the work they're doing?
Like Rebecca just said, sponsorship's massive in terms of the way the women's game is going to go forward. And in terms of getting crowds and people to support, you know, there is a market for that. You see that in Spain, you see that in Italy when they sell out, and 60,000. You saw it at the Euros when England, and as soon as the tickets were advertised, as soon as people were made aware, you see it at Wembley when the FA Cup, when tickets are out there and, you know, people are aware that the final's happening or the games, then they do sell out and there is a market for it. But in terms of the regular league, FAWSL, and is there really that much advertisement for people to be aware of where they're going, or, you know, the price of tickets, the price of season tickets? And that often is why then, you know, the money isn't great, because we then don't get numbers through. So sponsorship to promote that is obviously massive going forward.
And just finally on the points that Rebecca raised, she talked about opposition to playing, that there are going to be people in the country, possibly many of them fathers, who aren't that keen on the idea of their daughter playing football. Did you ever experience any opposition from anyone growing up?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think, like you said, some parents and some people in general might oppose to their daughters playing football, and some, oh, football still is man's game and girls shouldn't play. And that's you're going to get that. That's you're always going to have maybe one or two, or hopefully it can and go, and you know, you still have people on Twitter and men that comment and on women's football.
Get back in the
kitchen, and it's time to grow up, really, isn't
it?
We're not trying to like you said, men's football's men's football, women's football's women's football, but you need to appreciate, you know, we're still athletes. We still train just as hard.
And it is the same sport.
It is exactly the same sport. Technically, we are just as good as them, if not better half the time. You get men coaches that then come to the women's game and say, do you know what? And Phil Neville is an advocate of that. And he says, do you know what? I've seen some of the football played better than what I've played at, you know, Man United. And that speaks volumes in terms of the technical. Sorry that we can't run 100 metres as quick as you, unfortunately. You know, sorry that you are a bit stronger. That's natural genetics, not in terms of ability, not in terms of work rate and drive to get to where, you know, some of these female athletes are. And I think, like you said, it's time for people to realise that and start to appreciate women's football for exactly what it is.
Absolutely. And could the World Cup this summer be part of pushing that agenda forward? More on that coming up, and a little bit more from our man in Madrid.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Women's World Cup show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and Charlton attacking midfielder Lily Agg. And we're running through these groups of the Women's World Cup. Who could be the danger men? Who are going to take the lead in their groups? Group A, we were looking at France, South Korea, Norway, Nigeria. Norway, of course, without Hegerberg. France to top it, surely.
Yeah, I think I'll agree with you there. I think Norway will still be very good. They've got, you know, Maren Mjelde, midfield, plays at Chelsea, great player. I think France and Norway for me.
France and Norway. Looking at Group B, we've got Germany, China, Spain, South Africa.
Oh, that's a tough group.
Germany and Spain, just about.
Again, on form, you probably wouldn't go Germany. But yeah, I think I'll agree. I think I'd go Germany, Spain there.
And Group C, on paper, looks very, very scary. Australia, who are being tipped by many as a dark horse. Italy, Brazil, who, of course, have in their ranks Marta. She is 33. She's ageing. She is also considered to be the greatest women's player of all time. And Jamaica, who are we going for there?
I'm not going to say Brazil. I don't think they're going to qualify. Marta is she's fantastic, unbelievable player over the years. But again, as you said, you know, she's 33. Can she carry her team like she has the previous years? There's some other good players in there. But for me, I think I'm going to go Australia. They've got Sam Kerr. She will be scoring lots of goals, I'm sure. And I will go Italy.
Brazil to not get out of group at a World Cup. That's a bizarre sentence to say. Group D we've covered. We're saying England and...
Scotland,
yeah. As much as it pains me to say it. Group E doesn't look like a lethal one, and you'd have thought Netherlands will have it relatively easy, particularly with the PFA Player of the Year in their ranks. It's Canada, Cameroon, New Zealand and Holland. What are we saying?
Yeah, as you said, I think Holland will top that. They've got a great team. Like I said, they've got Miedema, who's on top form. They've got Jackie Gronin, played with her last year at Frankfurt. She's a great player. They're going to do really well, I think. They've done really well in the Euros, as you saw, and surprised a few people. Canada,
okay. And Group F, we've got the holders, the USA. Are they going to batter Thailand? What about Chile and Sweden?
I think for me that'll be USA and Sweden. I think Sweden might finish top. I'm going to go Sweden, USA.
We're getting all the controversial calls.
Got to go for an underdog. I'll switch it up a little bit.
Oh, that's wonderful. Lily Agg making all the shouts here on Love Sport Radio. Another man who's been on Love Sport Radio the entire time is Guy Watts. He is our man in Madrid.
It's our guy in Madrid.
I ruined the pun. I said, man in Madrid. What am I doing? Guy, you're still there. You're possibly with some very well-behaved football fans. What's the atmosphere like in the Spanish capital?
Yeah, you might have ruined the pun, but it was a bit more alliterative the way you did it, Johnny. I don't mind. As long as I get my jingle played, I'm not too fussy. Yeah, it's still a very nice atmosphere here. I've moved just slightly away from the sort of square I was in beforehand. I'm just outside the Mercado de San Miguel, which is one of the oldest markets in the city. It's now been sort of refurbed, revamped to be a very much 21st century market. It's got all glass walls outside it, and it is absolutely thriving today, as it has been actually ever since I arrived. I just treated myself to a nice little chorizo and courgette skewer, so that's going to keep me going, or help keep me going at least through the last couple of hours of updates on Love Sport tonight.
Guy, of course, you've been given challenges throughout the day. The guys on Drive, there were various suggestions that you should, I think I heard, eat 3 kilos of patatas bravas while having your stomach tickled, or attempt to do keepy uppies whilst also attempting to flirt with a Spanish waitress. Have you succeeded in any of those?
No.
And finally, in terms of all of those fans you've been talking to, any since we spoke last, any Liverpool fans, any Spurs fans with any exceptional stories of their route there or how they're feeling about the final?
Well, there are quite a few who I've spoken to over the course of the last day or so who really do have quite impressive stories. I'll take you through a couple of those in a sec. Just to clarify on those challenges, I didn't go as far as getting my belly tickled while eating patatas bravas. I didn't do any keepy uppies while flirting with a waitress, but
so
I
did buy myself
a Madrileño cap, which was then I was then told by Ewan Thomas looked like a child's cap, but hey, Patrick didn't specify what size it had to be. I also, of course, got some Liverpool fans to sing a couple of their songs live on the radio, and hopefully before I go off air tonight, we'll be speaking to a few more fans, particularly a couple of Spurs fans I've got lined up for us after 8 o'clock. But yeah, in terms of the journeys that I've heard about, some incredible ones. In particular, I have to say the Spurs fans, the Liverpool fans seem to have generally come from the northwest of England. The Spurs fans who are here have come from far and wide. I've spoken to one who's come from Texas. I've spoken to two from Miami. I've spoken to a couple who've come from Thailand, one from Hong Kong. There's been a guy from the Ukraine, a guy from Russia. There's been people from literally all over the world. It's quite incredible. And best of all, there was a guy who just a month and a half ago was out in Australia. He was living out there, working out there, but he is a Spurs fan through and through. And he said, having missed the World Cup last summer, because he was also out in Australia, he couldn't miss the chance to see Spurs in a semi-final. So he was there in Amsterdam, and he's here in Madrid now. So, yeah, quite incredible stories that I've been lucky enough to hear firsthand.
Wonderful stuff, Guy. Thank you. That is Guy Watts there, our roving reporter, our guy in Madrid, ahead of an all-English Champions League final between Liverpool and Spurs tomorrow night. I wonder if there are any Spurs fans from Baku there. I wonder if anyone was having to make the journey in reverse. Lily, as far as you're concerned, who do you think is going to win that Champions League final?
Liverpool obviously going into it favourites, but I like an underdog, don't I?
Clearly.
I'm going to go 2-1 Spurs. I am.
And Thailand are going to win the Women's World Cup. Talking of that Women's World Cup, I think we should talk about two things. Firstly, I need your tip for real dark horse. You like an underdog. Who's the most effective underdog of all?
We will go, I think, Australia. As you say, Sam Kerr, for me...
Goal scorer.
Scores goals for fun. I think, like I said, if you score goals, you win. So I think if she and Australia can do well and she can carry her team, they might just surprise a few people.
If only it was that simple for me. I struggle with the goal scoring and the winning part. In terms of other potential stars of the tournament, we're talking individual players who could light it up. Let's have a few of the perhaps expected real world stars and a couple who could surprise us.
Yeah, of course, like you said earlier, I think you spoke about Marijan, a world class player. You spoke about Marta again. Maybe
is she up to it? I'm interested by this because she's so good to watch, but she is also getting on a bit.
It's difficult, isn't it? Like you said, Carly Lloyd, for example, from USA, when she, you know, come over to Man City and there was all the talk about how great she is and how amazing she was going to be, and again, she kind of, well, in my opinion, didn't really deliver those really high expectations. Don't get me wrong,
she's 36. Unbelievable.
Yeah, but exactly that. So maybe it isn't their time anymore. So it'll be interesting to see how they get on. I think, like you said, Sam Kerr, golden boot. She's got to be in for the best shot, I'd say, there. Again, you've got people like Erin Cuthbert, who's been fantastic for Chelsea in Scotland, if they can do well. She scored a fantastic goal the other night. Don't know if you've seen it, but picks the ball up in the middle of the park and drives forward, takes a touch and just unleashes a goal. Top bins. And it's unbelievable. So I think she'll do really well. Lucy Bronze, hopefully, for England, will show everyone how good she is. I think they are the ones that stand out for me so far.
I mean, Kerr's record, particularly since joining the Chicago Red Stars, 18-22. How about that? That is quite something, and not too shabby for Australia either. 31-76.
Yeah, not bad at all. Like I said, golden boot. I think she will fancy herself, but also, like I said, I'm going to go maybe Nikita Paris. She's on top form. Frank Kirby also, lots of goals.
So with those England strikers, who's the most likely? Who's going to be the focal point?
It's going to be difficult. I need to see, firstly, who's going to be playing.
Like you said, that is a big battle.
It's you know, you've got Tony Duggan, you've got Frank Kirby. There's a mix of players that, again, they can't all play. So depending on who he plays, I think Frank Kirby will definitely be up there, though.
Wonderful stuff. Well, it's been a wonderful first show here on the Women's World Cup show on Love Sport Radio. Lily Agg, a pleasure to spend an hour in your company. Of course, the World Cup getting underway in just a week's time on the 7th of June. We will be here throughout it discussing all of the games, all of the upsets, all of the spills, and also, let's hope, an England win. Join us next time on the Women's World Cup show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.